Welcome, everybody. I got all the okays out that exist in me. They're out. They're gone. They're repelled. They're gone. We have exorcised the demons. They're gone, guys. That's it. You don't get to hear them ever again. That's it. Aren't you happy about that?
Retired? You're retiring the okays?
I retired the okays. I just need to get out a whole bunch of them. They're done. I spent them. That's it. I woke up with them. They're out. We have a great new idea that's going to start the next episode after this one, where we have no longer have to say okay. That weird, weird thing. I don't even know how it started. We don't have to do it anymore, guys. That's it. It's over. And I promise that from the bottom of my heart. Anyway, we are the Coogan Chronicles podcast. We're a podcast where two former kid actors interview
other former kid actors.
About what?
About growing up in the biz, about everything that they did early in life and later in life.
And later in life, as it relates to their early in life stuff that they did. That's what we're doing. And sometimes AJ and I interview each other. Like, we're kind of going to be doing a little bit today. We're going to be jumping into the AJ and I territory. And we have a lot we wanted to cover. And the first thing is going to be, actually, our new intros are going to be great. They're going to be great, guys. That's the thing I'm the most excited maybe to tell you guys. We're going to start giving you guys some great quotes from former kid actors. In roles they did in movies and TV shows, mainly movies. And we're going to see who can guess them. And we're going to see how good AJ and I's impressions are. And we've got some, let me tell you, we got some good ones, guys.
Chris, I bet you could guess more of them than anybody else on the planet, possibly. I bet you know these quotes better than anybody.
I know the ones for sure I'm going to give, but I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm like, yep, no, I'm the encyclopedic knowledge of everything child actor.
I guess that's true. You know,
every child actor has ever said.
Everything Goonies, everything Star Wars, but there's no kids in Star Wars.
There's no kids. No, there's some kids in Star Wars. Relax there, guy. Yeah, there's kids in Star Wars. Okay, guys. So I wanted to just start off before we really get into the nitty gritty. I want to say I was watching this movie a few weeks ago called Catfight, and it's this cool little movie. It relates no relation to the subject of a former kid actor or child actor, but in it there was a little one of the sort of storylines, one of the plots in it is that the Sandra Oh's character in Catfight has a son, and he wants to be a painter. He wants to be an artist. He draws, and she's this kind of prissy woman who's all about money and vanity, and doesn't even work, and like kind of could care less about any real artistic endeavor. And the thing that she does is like she sort of the whole beginning of the movie, she's just like giving that cliche advice to her son. She's like, great, great, okay, paint all you want, but the truth is you're going to business school and you're going to become a lawyer and you're going to get the money and blah, blah, blah. And then you're going to take this little silly thing that you love doing and you're just going to lock it away and you're never going to care about life ever again. You're just going to be rich. And like that's the way it's presented, right? It's like, go find the secure thing. And then they have a scene where she says to him, like, just go find the secure thing. And, you know, you can totally keep painting, but like, whatever, you know? And he's really hurt. And this becomes like the crux of her character, which she continually battles throughout the rest of this movie. That's not important. But what is important is, as I was listening, I was like, that is the standard when people write movies, when writers talk about like, I don't know, when they give their perspective on the artist, of the person who's, you know, going to go endeavor into being an artist in some form, the usual perspective often, or the cliche, is that there's a parent that says like, go find security. Don't do that. You know, just don't do that. Like, go find security. Sure, if you want to make it a hobby or you want to pursue it on the side, great, but go find some security. And as I've gotten older, and now that I have a daughter, as I was watching this for the first time, I was thinking, that's great fucking advice. I was like, that is the advice. That is totally, when I was 18, I was like, yeah, fuck the parents that are like that. You know, yeah, that's ridiculous. I am an artist and I should be going out there and living my dream and doing the thing. And you're like, yeah, you know, that is what I even had a lot of pride around. But ultimately I'm like, no, that's good advice. And as it relates to the former kid actor, I think so often that is the, that really permeates the experience of every former kid actor. There's always a debate for them and their parents as to, like, now that you're doing this, if you're doing this professionally and you're endeavoring in it, or you've been working, are you going to continue this dream and just, and like, become a hustling artist in some fashion if you don't immediately hit it big or something like that? Or are you going to go find some security somewhere else, something else to do, and let this be a surprise if it works out, rather than putting all your eggs in that basket? I've been talking for 5 full minutes. Go ahead.
just let you roll on this one subject for an hour. I have a question and a comment. So my comment is, I think in my experience through life, it is incredibly difficult for adults or older people to relate to the fire that exists in younger people to pursue the arts. It's like we're speaking two different languages. You can't even relate on that. When I was pushing to pursue a career as an actor or pursue a career in music, the older people I would talk to, they just couldn't understand the gusto with which I was approaching it. And I couldn't understand how they were just like, no, I have no interest in that. I'm just trying to make money and put my kids through college. And like, this is, I cannot relate to you. So we are speaking two different languages. And in a way, art is made up of a lot of young people, young authors. And they tend to, the successful ones grow as they age, you know, into artists in it later in life. But so much of the music that we listen to and the books that we read and the movies that we watch are all created out of the minds of relatively young people. I mean, 20s and 30s.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of like, I just started this at 50. You don't see that typically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's that. But I think, yeah, and that makes sense. I totally get that would make sense that, you know, when you've got that spark, I mean, you only get that spark at that age. I think it's rare to find it usually when you're older. Maybe you find a different spark, a different kind of spark, but it's not that one. It's not the one that can set your life on a specific trajectory, maybe for the rest of your life, you know? But I think with it, I think what I was trying to make the point of is that the common advice in the culture of, like, if you're an artist and you want to go be an artist, go ahead and live that dream. And even if your own parents are telling you, don't do that, you know, go ahead and do it for fun, but don't do that.
They don't get it, Chris, but they don't get it.
Well, exactly. That's what I always thought. But now I'm a parent. I'm 36. I've been acting since I was 4 years old. And I'm like, get that fucking security, baby.
This is my question then. So I had a comment and a question with your daughter. I find it so hard to believe that if she comes to you at whatever age and says, Dad, I want to be an actor just like you. You're my idol. I want to be an actor just like you. Show me. That you would tell her no and tell her to go like, no. You're going to go to school and you're going to take the regular path. I feel like you'd be so flattered and you'd want to teach her the ways and help her become an actor and be an artist. I just don't buy it for a second. If your daughter comes to you and suggests she wants to be an artist, you're going to be so 100% on board. That's not a question. That's another comment.
Well, I'm glad that you feel that way. I'm undecided. And here's what I do feel is that and this is maybe like if we're asking ourselves the question we ask all our guests, right? You know, which is, would you let your kids do it? For me, you know, the more we've endeavored in this conversation with all these former kid actors and thought about it way more than I'm sure you ever had prior to doing this thing. I haven't thought about being a former kid actor as much as we have in the last few months. But, you know, when I think about it now, I do think like that would probably be my best advice is like more on the lines of what Sandra Oh is saying in Catfight to her son about like, yeah, I mean, look, if you love it, cool, go do that. Get a dope plan B, you know, or a plan A and make that a plan. Like don't put every single egg in that basket is really the truth.
Yeah, maybe the issue is not enough people know how to communicate the value of a plan B to a young artist. And that's the shortfall. Because
maybe that's it.
There's a lot of value in a plan B. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. It doesn't have to be that you're setting yourself up for failure. You don't believe in yourself.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be an either or. It doesn't have to be give up on your dream and go do this. It can be, hey, look, the reality of life is that. Because here's what I know. And this is what I base all of this on. And what I've learned since then and why when I watch Catfight now, why I look at it the way that I do and why I have this perspective is because as I've gotten older and as I've been in the entertainment industry this long. Like, I remember somebody, a friend of mine told me that she sat on a plane and got to hang out with Robert De Niro all afternoon as they were flying from New York to LA. So 5 hours sitting right next to Robert De Niro, hung out with him the whole time. She said she got ordered a couple of glasses of wine and just let loose and was like, Robert, I got a lot of questions for you. Let's talk. And he was really forthcoming and they talked a lot. And one of the things she asked him was like, are you still happy as an actor? Like doing all this, like, are you really happy? And he said, yeah, you know, I am. But also, like, you know, I own a lot of restaurants for a reason. You know, she's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, I started restaurants because, like, every now and then I do a movie. It was about to come out. And I thought I was going to bomb and I'll never work again. You know, my whole career is going to just go down the drain, or I'll be doing stuff I don't want to be doing a couple years from now. He's like, and so when she told me this is maybe 15 years ago, I thought, oh, man, the insecurity of an actor's life never ends. Like, if Robert De Niro is feeling it, it doesn't matter. You will never escape that. It doesn't matter what career you have, you know, and that's the truth. Maybe Meryl Streep and Daniel Day are the only two, and Denzel. Those are the three that have escaped it. But otherwise, everybody else is in the same boat, including Robert De Niro and Tom Hanks and, you know, Julianne Moore and every other wonderful actor that everybody loves. They'll all feel that same deep insecurity because that is the life of the actor. It is. It's a collaborative art form. And I think that, you know, your career is unpredictable. Nobody's ever owed anything. And so when, you know, if I was telling former kid actors, you know, if there's a room full of them looking at me and they're like, you know, so what do we do? You know, do we go for this? That'd be my best advice. Is like, yeah, I mean, if you want to go for it, go for it. But also, like, you know, don't just do that, you know, do other things as well. And more than all of that, I think this leads me into the next part, which actually I'll get to, but go ahead, say something.
Well, yeah, because I'm trying to separate monetary success and fulfillment in life. And they're these two separate things. And how do you communicate to a young person the value of a plan B when the concept of money does not matter to them at all whatsoever? They're like, yeah, I could sleep on couches for the rest of my life. I don't care. I'll just be a starving artist. That's fine. Because that's the way your brain's wired. But I wonder if the way to communicate it is find other things in life that give you a sense of purpose outside of one thing, so that there's more of a balance there and you can find purpose and fulfillment, not just in one act.
Exactly.
Through one endeavor and to be able to separate it from the monetary needs, because I don't know, as a young person, I couldn't hear that. It was never about money.
And for multiple reasons. Yeah. For multiple reasons. But also, I mean, you know, I was just thinking now as you were talking, I was thinking, like, you know, also too, I've yet to meet someone in the entertainment industry, whether it's a writer, producer, a director, or actor, or somebody that I really respect and that a lot of other people respect, like a successful one, that isn't a pretty well-rounded person. A majority of them really do have very well-rounded lives outside of acting quite often. And, you know, I feel like that's the untold secret of very successful actors in particular, is that, like, they're very well-rounded. They have lots of other things in their life. Like, how many famous actors and actresses have bands? Like, they all have music. And they're not famous bands. They're bands nobody's lining up to, you know, buy Bruce Willis's albums. Like, but Bruce Willis has had a band for 35 years. Like, has anyone here listening heard a Bruce Willis song? No. Will you ever? No. You won't even YouTube him after this. Like, there's, you know, but it's Bruce Willis. And so that's the thing. And I think as it relates to former kid actors, I think that that isn't quite often enough part of the experience for former kid actors, because you're so young and because so much outlook is geared towards the future for former kid actors. I mean, I don't know about you, but so much of my experience was people talking to me about my future all the time. Every time I was on a set, some AD or hair makeup person or tutor or another parent, somebody was always talking about, like, well, he's going to go to college, you know, and like, what does he want to do? And Chris, what kind of movies do you want to do? What, you know, like, it was, there was so much about this big future that, and I feel like it rarely encompassed this conversation, you know,
it rarely encompassed or touched on this. Yeah. It feels like there's a part of your life, maybe it's up until about 30, where every single decision that you're going to make is going to have an impact then on the next 60 years of your life, where you stop making decisions and you're just like coasting through, but you're like, okay, but I'm living this life based on the first 30 years and all these decisions I made. And nobody was really stressing the importance of every single one of those decisions. And now I know that in certain situations, those decisions are heavily stressed and a lot of importance is put on them. Hence, you know, like the college admissions scandal and all of those things that that come out of it. But it's less of a common theme with young actors. And and how important those decisions are. I really wish there was a way that it was always a positive. Yeah, like you're going to be a young artist and that's incredible and it's going to benefit your life in this these myriad of ways. And wouldn't it be great if everyone had the opportunity to be a young artist because it always benefits your life? But unfortunately, that's not always the case. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
You know, I was just thinking just now about, I thought about my brother, Eric, right? Which is, if anybody listening is familiar with one of my brothers, it's usually Sean, who's also an actor. And Eric is the guy in between us. And Eric was also a former kid actor and has since, he was a mechanic for a long time and has now been back in school to study like computer science. And he wants to like, I don't know, get into tech stuff. So I don't know. It's all over my head. But my brother, Eric, you know, being a former kid actor, I think that's what Eric came to, is Eric hit 16 and he was like, I'm not an artist. Like, I don't want to, that is not, that isn't it. Like, I like, you know, he was like, I like to build engines. Like, I like practical using my hands. And he's also a very artistic person. You know, he's a very creative person. He likes, you know, part of him being a mechanic was that, is he found a real creativity working on cars, you know, literally, and also a hatred for working on cars because the job sucks sometimes too. So, you know, maybe in some ways he goes, should have stuck with the acting thing. You know, I don't know what's inside his head, but my point to it is just that, you know, when you're, I think the other pitfall for a former kid actor, maybe no one realizes this or not, is that, you know, they've already been deemed an artist. You're already like living in it. You're doing the artist's life before you actually kind of understand the difference between that kind of lifestyle versus a more, what would be the word, formidable, a more secure, beaten path lifestyle where you're going to go to college, study something, come out and try to get a job in that respective field, and then find security in it as much as you can. You know, it's like, that's the, you know, that's different. People do that for the entertainment industry all the time. And I feel like that's the other thing I'll just comment on quickly is that, you know, people get out of college, whether it's NYU or USC Film School or Juilliard or, you know, theater schools all over the world. And then they come out and they're like, what do you mean? Nobody cares? You're like, yep, nobody cares. Like, it's almost like rarely.
What,
that
you,
does
what
that
you
translate.
Think that nobody cares that they went to school?
Oftentimes, the entertainment industry, I'd say, like, I've met so many people and worked with so many people that have come out, and like sometimes it's helped in certain ways, but more often than not, I feel like all I've heard is that, you know, it's the same struggle. They're in the same boat, whether they would.
Yeah,
have gone
I don't
to
think it helps you
not.
Get a. I don't think it necessarily helps you book a role, but it would help you get an agent. Like, agents are going to go to Juilliard and see a showcase and you know, choose to represent actors.
But maybe not. I know some that have gone to Juilliard and have not had representation ever. I know some that have studied like Shakespeare for 5 years and literally have never had an agent. You know, like that's the reality too. So maybe. Okay, AJ.
Yeah, what's next? What do you got?
Here's what we got. I want to know what, in all these conversations you've had, I want to know what you feel like you've been learning, or what has like come to your mind often, or how is your perspective changed at all? Or
yeah, well, gosh, my perspective has changed in certain ways. I think the thing that surprised me the most and has stood out to me the most is the number of stories we've heard of people having incredibly positive experiences during their days of being a child actor. Most of the stories we've heard.
And also that a majority of them didn't misspend their Cougar account money like we thought everybody.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah. Yeah. They were all very responsible with their Cougar account money. Yeah,
except for me and you, I guess.
And Andrew and a majority of our very close friends.
Yeah.
Andrew got a loan against his Coogan account money to buy a car because he wanted it before he was 18.
And not just
that's
a car, because he's like, you know, I got to get to auditions. I need a car. He was like, no, I need a sick Audi S4 with some 22-inch rims and a $4,000 sound system. That's what Andrew needed.
Yeah. Which is amazing where he is now in life, because it's just the complete opposite of that.
But anyway, so
here's my point. The number of stories we've heard where the experience was overall positive, but yet if we ask them, would they allow their children to do it? Almost universally, everyone has said no.
Yeah, everybody says no, absolutely not.
What is the deal with that?
Here's the thing. Here's what I think about it, AJ. And we start asking people moving forward about that real specifically. My guess is this, and it's because it comes from me, because this is, I feel like I would have the same answer. I go like, no, I probably wouldn't let my daughter do this. But I feel like I had a really wonderful time for the most part. And I think it comes from, quite honestly, I think there's a lot of like, you know, there's a bit of compartmentalization when it comes to thinking about your life as a former kid actor and how it's affected you into your adulthood. And I think when you come on a podcast in general, and I know this from doing other people's podcasts before you and I ever started one, you're really vulnerable. It's a strange thing. It's not an interview for a project you've done. You know, it's not just catching up with friends. Like it's not, it's like a strange performance art. It really is. And you and I know this kind of, even when we started, like we're still, I feel like for me, I'm still getting comfortable being totally me, you know, on this, in this medium, and figuring out how to do that and not, you know, being an honest version of myself, but also an entertaining version of myself, and you know, and trying to
that is balance. You, Chris.
But that is, but and it is exactly that is me to some degree. But also, I don't know. Anyway, it's a new form. But my point to it was that, you know, I think for a lot of our guests, I think that there's still a lot hidden in the conversation. I think that there's still a lot that we haven't really tapped into and really been able to figure out how to give space for. That isn't, and here's what I can say, because there's a few people, this isn't to blanket, you know, all our former guests or anything like that with this kind of statement, but there's definitely been some people that, you know, we talk to, and as soon as we're done recording, we get 10 or 15 minutes of stuff that we hear that's like kind of crazy or interesting or really hard, you know, like the shittier stuff to tell somebody, and we get that immediately, and we're like, oh shit, man. Like we would love to have this be a part of this.
Do you think it's a difference between people that are still, well, because this is your situation. You're an actor still. I mean, that's your life. You're an actor every single day.
There is a bit of that too. Yeah.
So is it a difference between those people that are still pursuing acting and those people that have chosen a different career path that is going to determine the difference in how they reflect back? Because what you're saying is that people are being more positive than they otherwise would be because they're on the podcast. And I'm wondering, are they being overly positive because they're still pursuing it? And would it be different if they were now like a lawyer or I don't know what else, a chef?
I think so. Like Andrew, you know, like Andrew, who doesn't act and hasn't acted in a long time. And he came on and really just laid some things out, you know, but he had a largely positive experience, but he laid all the things out why he didn't like it and why he stopped. So yeah, I mean that to me, if you're not doing it anymore, it's much easier to just sort of, you know, spill the full tea on it all and just let it all hang out there. And especially if you're, I think here's the difference. You know, some of these things, these issues that I think former kid actors, all of us will, whether we like it or not, have, or challenges, whatever you want to call them, the things we can contend with, they keep going. They don't really stay, like, they become part of your life. You know, I don't think they really disappear. And I don't know, I think quite often we've found that, you know, I don't know, we've talked to some people that like have told us, God, I haven't actually really thought about this stuff very much until I'm talking to you guys. And you're like, whoa, ooh, really? I know. Or then there's some people who have thought a ton about it and overthought it and now might be in a place where they've lost the clarity, you know, like, I don't know. I don't really want to analyze too much what everybody else was saying or doing. I think for me, what I can say for me for sure is that, you know, where I felt like maybe I'm not as open to the negative side of things is, yes, maybe in part because I'm still an actor. So I'm still holding the fort down and finding a mental fortitude to continually try to be an actor, you know, and right, there's only so much, you can't do that and simultaneously be like, this thing sucks. You know, it's like, it sucked for a long time. You know, it's like, you can't really go down that path too often. But then also at the same time, I think it's just the, you know, I think it's a really strange, vulnerable thing to talk about. And I feel like, it, you know, I don't know if you and I have yet to really figure out how to ask people the questions that gives them space to answer.
Yeah, what a bizarre thing. Imagine just some regular person is, you're going to come on this podcast and you're going to talk about your life from the ages of 6 to 14. And we're like, no, I don't want to do that. That's like way too vulnerable.
Yeah, way vulnerable and weird. And you're like, I don't really know how to answer these questions, you know? And you're doing it with like, you know, two actors that you've known or don't know. And, you know, yeah, it'd be a very strange experience. I would have a strange experience doing it.
What about you? What surprised you the most about going through this thing, whether it's something you learned or something, you know, some interview we had that surprised you, something that didn't go the way you expected it?
There's a couple things. The first thing I'll say is that I've been really upset how much I relate to everybody. I'm like,
why upset?
I've just make a joke. I think if I've been upset, it's because I've been sitting there always thinking like, Like
you were special.
That's it.
I was like,
I don't like being not as unique as maybe I think I am sometimes. You know, I'm like, well, I really, and that's another way of saying I really relate so much to every single person we've had on here. Like there's not, you know, even if our experience and who we've become and the type of person we've become is totally different. And I wouldn't even relate. Like there's some guests I wouldn't relate to as a person now, you know, just like as a person, but I completely understand their life and how they got there. Like I totally relate to their whole childhood, and there's yet to be a person that I've fully connected with in a way. And that has given me clarity that I see a lot of myself in. And, you know, and some of those things have been really interesting, really moving, and quite honestly, really troubling. Like sometimes I really like, we get off these calls sometimes talking for a couple hours, and I'm like, I don't want to think about this as much. I don't want to go there. You know, like, well,
I'm glad to hear you say that actually, because that was a big part of the reason why we wanted to do this is this hypothesis that there were a lot of common themes experienced by former kid actors or the life of a kid actor. And we had to put it to the test, and that's turned out to be true.
It is. And I feel like we're really just scratching the surface with a lot of things. But for me, one of the things we scratched at that got deep in me that really kind of ate at me sometimes was like, I really got to see, and this, I don't know, it's hard to say maybe what I'm about to say or some of these things, because I don't want to put my opinion and how someone else made me feel onto them. So it's not like, you know, this is just me and what happened to me. I wouldn't say, you know, this is someone else said something and I related to it and that's what they were saying. So, you know, and I'll just explain. That'll be better. What I mean is like, you know, the deep parts of me that were affected is like, I heard and I could feel the parts of me that like, I can feel a really deep ego about being a kid actor. And like, I can feel sometimes the like, oh, I'll never let this go. I'll never for so long as like, and like feeling as though if I don't become the actor I'd wanted to be since I was a kid, that somehow that's a failure on my part, or that I'm not good enough, or that like, you know, that I don't know, I'm not as talented as I wanted to be, or I didn't work hard enough, or I'm not attractive enough. Like all these really deep insecurities can be there for me in this. And I realized they go back all the way back. They started the genesis. A lot of these things were way back then, because I can hear certain things in people that have sat there and rung so true for me. And I've walked away going like, man, Jesus, I know I had stuff in here.
Is part of that almost like a feeling of betrayal for every person you were on set with that said, you're so talented. Oh my God, you're going to be a star. You're going to be such a huge movie star. And then you're
there's a lot.
15 years later, well, where's my big movie, guys? You, too many people told me this. Is there a sense of betrayal in there or no?
Yeah. I mean, there's a sense of a lot. That's what I mean. There's a lot to it. I think that I don't know if I register it as betrayal necessarily. I think what I register it as is the same probably hard thought I've had, which is that the entertainment industry is harsh, you know? And like, and sometimes if I'm totally honest with myself, I go, I'm not completely happy often with exactly where my career is, you know? I'm not. And I'm really grateful for so much. And predominantly that is how I feel. And, or at least I'm always reaching for that point. And I usually find it. But at the end of the day, there is an underlying resource inside there, you know, a perspective that really doesn't go away. That is like, that could be that does feel a little, as you put it, betrayed, but more so like just does feel a little like, Hey, what's the deal? Like I've been doing this since I was 10, you know, it's really hard not to have that perspective sometimes. And that, mm-hmm. that voice inside, you know, and to measure up to that. And it requires a lot of humility. I think it requires a lot of, you know, it's Zen in the art of auditioning, you know, mm-hmm. Zen in the art of being an actor and a person and, you know, checking your ego in so many different ways. But also, I don't know, I maybe I'm not explaining it well enough. It's like, I think I learned so much these last few months about the part of me that definitely got set up for some specific challenges just purely based on the fact that I was a professional working actor as a kid, you know? And well, that I still pursue it and you know, and that I'm still in that field.
So I want to ask this question. It's sort of like a chicken or the egg thing. And which one are you, the chicken or the egg? Do you think you were born to be a performer? And so I'm just going to use this word. So the curse of being a performer the rest of your life was there from the outset? Or do you think being a child actor is what planted the curse of being a performer for the rest of your life?
See, that's a great question. That might be the existential crisis question of my life. It's really the truth. And that's exactly what, like, that might be the great, that's probably the better way I could have said what I've been trying to say about this, which is, you know, I think for a long time when I was like 14, 15, 16, even younger, even 12, 13, 14 years old, and 16 and 18 and all through into my mid 20s, I really did have the core belief that, like, there was something, because my childhood was so unique and because it was so especially different from my life, my parents' life. You know, both my parents are immigrants. They come from literally, like, my dad comes from a dirt hut in Cuba, and my mom comes from like an insane alcoholic family from like Germany, Poland, England, and all over Europe, and made it to Jersey somehow. And they met in a disco club called Fire and Ice. You know, it's like they're, and, you know, and my mom is a real loving but also insane drug addict, and my dad is like a nuclear engineer who does math, and they're very middle lower class, and like none of them ever, you know, my dad's favorite movies are Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, and my mom watched all the soap operas and read tabloids religiously. Like, my parents don't, my life was so different from theirs, and probably what, so for me, I always thought, you know, I thought that I was like, I had been touched, you know, like there was like I was knighted in some way to be an actor, and that it's because it had worked out so young, and I was like, I'm fucking Broadway at nine, you know, and with a director that I would later come to realize is like one of the most lauded directors in all of theater and film, and was an Oscar winner. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that says something about me is what I always, that's how I always felt. And as I've gotten older, it, speaking to that thing we opened up about, which is I realized that I, you know, to limit my life to just being an actor is really sad. It's really sad. And to not have a full life as a human being is sad. And so I've dedicated so much of my life to being so much more being an actor, yet it is very inescapable. You know, it's like, it's like, you know, there was someone asked me once a long time ago, something about like, well, you, I forgot what the question was, but my my answer I remember giving was, I said, you know, everything I've ever done is either to be an actor, or in the endeavor for it to be a better actor or something, or in total spite of it. You know, I was like, but otherwise they're both connected, you know? So even if I've done something that seems like it has nothing to do with being an actor, it's simply because I'm telling myself I hate being an actor. You know, it's like they're, you know,
but it's maybe the first word that is like, who's Chris Marquette? The first word that comes to your mind is actor, probably.
Is guru. I mean, guru is usually the word that comes to my mind. But yeah, we can go with actor. That's totally fine. Yeah. So that, no, that's the, you know, yeah, exactly. And I don't know if that's ever totally escapable. And it isn't as much anymore. I mean, I'm a husband. I'm, you know, we're close friends. Like, there, you know, I'm a father. There are things that are obviously way more important to me, that if push came to shove, if I had to make some decision in life as to like, what, you know, what comes first, you know, there's a lot that comes before being an actor at this point in life. But at the same time, you know, it's like, even that's like hard to say, you know, it's like, there's something.
Yeah. It probably took you years to get there, because many actors never get beyond that. It's
grave. I will literally, you can open my grave up after you bury me 10 years later, and I'm going to stand out there and I'm going to say, to be or not to be. Like, I will be a skeleton.
Well, and also, if you don't answer the question that way, it's like, okay, a job comes up. What are you willing to drop and what are you not willing to drop? Okay, I'm willing to get divorced. I'm willing to send my kid off to boarding school. I'm willing to, like, kill my parents, whatever. Like, they will do anything. And if you answer the question differently, if you say, well, I would not do any of these things, but then I would do the job, it's like, well, then you don't really want to be an actor. Yeah. There is that sort of stigma, right?
There is. There's a total stigma. I think you're totally right. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, you know, it's even weird admitting. I don't feel like I even wanted to admit that before we started this episode today recording. But, you know, that's one thing. The other thing too, I think, which I really heard and I talked a bit about in our intro for Charlie Talbert's episode and for Stephen Anthony Lawrence's episode, you know, is that I really related to those guys in a way that is hard also to admit, where I really feel like I related to, you know, being this kid actor on a set where my home life was really intensely traumatic and really chaotic, and how that, you know, really, like, later on set me up to kind of, you know, as I realized for me, I was like, oh, I was set up to then, I was seeking a sense of security within my career, and, you know, the same mm-hmm. one I had been looking for at home and didn't have at home. And that was dangerous. It put me in a really dangerous spot because I feel like, you know, I suddenly, you know, and I knew this prior, I knew this for years, but really seeing at least a version of that in other people, you know, gave me even further clarity. You know, like I understood that about myself at 25. I was like, oh, whoa, I got to change how I look at some things. You know, this is not, mm-hmm. you know, my career as an actor and the people I work with are not going to give me that. And I should not be asking them for that. That is not, you know, and I need to go work on myself. And I did. And I spent, you know, as you know, like I've done a lot of things to go, you know, find good mental health and good spirituality and stability inside, you know, and go through things. But I think the last thing too is just that I realized I got such clarity as to like, oh, you know, I don't know. Like I suddenly realized, you know, nobody on sets were that concerned about what was going on in my home life, you know, and it's not really anyone's job to be doing that. And there were certain things that did happen on set that like my mother's drug addiction and some of my parents' chaotic volatility did spill over to my time on set and spilled over into my relationships, and managers and agents knew some of these things that I was going through. And, you know, it's tricky in the entertainment industry how you deal with those things when it comes to a kid, you know?
I don't want to interrupt you because it sounds like you have a little tag on.
No, I don't. I actually don't. I'm figuring out as we're talking.
Oh, okay. It also speaks to the value of having friends that are level-headed and grounded and are not.
To your own horn right now?
Well, no, you had a lot more friends than just me. I mean, you and I see each other now in life way more than we see any of our other friends. But back then, you had a lot of friends. You've always had a lot of friends. But for the most part, everyone that we were friends with back then were very level-headed and grounded, and were not that, like, we're not fame-obsessed or success-obsessed in the way that some actors and child actors can be. And we just got kind of lucky with that because
we did.
That's not everyone's story. So when you had your own battle of what success on set meant to you, how that was a safe place, you know, things being chaotic at home, having those friends were invaluable to you, I would imagine, at time.
A billionth. I mean,
you'd be a different person.
Oh, 100%. I would most likely have a mugshot. I would most likely have had a record, you know,
because you had people to call you out, but you had people to call you out on stuff and say, that's not cool, man, that you can't do that.
Well, no, exactly. You know, and also I think just, you know, there was, you know, and this is speaking to you and Andrew McFarlane specifically, right? Which is like, you guys, you know, still this day, we're all family. And that is like, I found family, and I found family with two people that were had the exact same life I did, which I had never had before. You know, it's like, I was in public schools with a bunch of kids that didn't understand for the most part. And all the little child actors I knew, quite honestly, were insane. So like, I barely, you know, it's like, I was like, I don't want to hang out with that person ever again. And so, you know, so finding two people that were normal and did what I did and understood it and didn't care. And in the same way, I didn't care, you know, I just didn't care.
You cared, you know? But you didn't care. You cared. Like,
yeah,
you
cared,
but
you didn't care. Well, you cared when you needed to, and you didn't care right afterwards. You know, it wasn't like you were going, you and I and Andrew were hanging out and skateboarding or going to the Burbank Mall.
We never talked about acting.
Never. We never talked about a single audition. Unless there was something hysterically funny that happened. That's it. That was the extent of us actually talking about
stuff. Or your very short phase where you were a method actor and you would come hang out with us in character, and everyone's like, what the fuck is Chris doing?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, that was, and it worked. It was good. It was good for a couple of things. And then it needed to stop. But see, that's what I mean. I was tethered to you guys in a nice way. And you're right. We got really lucky because our friend circle too, that got even bigger past me, you and Andrew, with, you know, Luke Ebrell, Aaron Himmelstein, and John Foster and Dan Bird, and, you know, and the even bigger circle of like 100 other former kid actors that were all mm-hmm. much bigger, for the most part, our real close circle of dudes. You know, I always thought we were like the Lost Boys. I was like, oh, we're just all, because we all were in some sense, we all at least in some way got like,
because
sort of,
nobody, you know, had a regular job, and we
had a regular job with
10 in the morning until like 2 in the morning, just playing Mario Kart and eating
just playing Mario Kart, smoking cigarettes, getting drunk, hanging out and doing nothing and waiting for that next audition. And we were all the same lifestyle. We all had also made a lot of money as kids, so we turned 18 and we all like had a little bit of security, you know, like at least some, you know, none of us were going like, all right, we're gonna go, I'm gonna be a bartender next month, you know. It's like we all had the security to hang out, to do it. So because we all had that unanimously, it was nice. We were like, cool, let's party and hang out and go start our lives. And also a majority of our friends, you know, not me, you and Andrew, but a majority of our friends, all they were from out of town like we were, but their parents all left them. So they were sort of orphaned as well, you know? So for me in particular, who had kind of been orphaned through dysfunctional parenting, I also got to relate to everybody in that respect too. I felt like I really, you know, I was in the same boat, and not because of this, you know, intense family life I was coming from, but because everybody was suddenly sort of dropped into the world and we all felt the same way. And it was nice. And it was nice to have everyone.
Right.
Yeah. So that's another big thing that's really come up that I get to see in all these interviews and get to see where people,
there's that Truman Capote, I think it's Truman Capote quote, right? Where he relates to the character in his book. It's just that that character went out the back door and he went out the front door. And yeah. I wonder if you feel like that a little bit, like you just barely got through. And
1,000%. I even told my wife this morning, I was like, you know, there's another version of my life where like, it's real bad. It's like, it's really bad. Like it is. Yeah, it's horrible. Which in fact might lead me to let's talk about this next section real fast. Then we're going to bring to some funny stuff, okay. AJ. So here's guys, AJ and I got in a really big argument right before we started this thing. You never even know it. And I don't even know how happy you're going to be me even admitting that. But we did like a legit argument. And part of it is because our close friend Andrew had said to us, you know, I think I've been listening to the podcast. I think you guys need to probably start discussing like, you know, like the events out in the public, like in the headlines that concern child actors. For instance, like Shia LaBeouf getting canceled for, you know, all this crazy stuff, and you know, Dustin Diamond dying and passing away, and you know, and him having a very sordid past as a former kid actor, and you know, and Zachary Ty Bryant, you know, from Home Improvement, that guy, you know, he's got a mugshot now. He entered that club, and AJ and I got in a bit of an argument because I was like, I think we should start talking about the subject, you know, outside of just our own experience in a way, and just the interviews we have with people, because essentially we are talking about the subject with people, and it exists out there. And it's not the biggest subject in the world. However, it's very popular. And, you know, and our argument was what, AJ? Our argument was, you were like, we don't need to talk about people. And I get that. Both you and I don't talk about people normally. We're not sitting there talking about Kanye and, you know, and Kim or whatever, you know, we don't really, that's not in us normally. And also like, we don't want to gossip and we don't want to be people talking about someone else if they're not in front of us really. But I'm sitting here also thinking we're a podcast exploring the lives of former kid actors, we should probably do that. And I don't, you know, and we're trying to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I think the things on the subject, so I do have my concerns about opening up this can of worms, if you will. But the aspects of the subject that are interesting to me would be, what is it about being a former child actor that played a role in the situation that the three people that you mentioned find themselves in? What was there any influence there? And kind of broadening it out a bit, those are just three people we're mentioning right now that have had been in the public eye because of things that were less than positive. But there's countless former child actors that have been in a similar boat with mugshots and other things that have happened to them. And why? Why is that? Well, I mean, it seems like it's more than average of any. I mean,
is it though? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I wonder. I mean, you know, I wonder if you took. I don't know if there's a certain amount of, at least the two we talked to, right? Robert Eiler and Devin Werkheiser. Those are the guys that said they got some mugshots. You know, they got arrested for stuff, and you know, both of them like. I don't know. I don't know if they fall into a specific type of category that I'd say.
Yeah, like, it's not, probably not connected. their situations that they shared with us probably not connected to their former child actor. So then there's the other thing, which is they're just unfairly treated and put in the public eye for something that happened.
That's for sure with Robert Eiler. Like, Robert Eiler is unfairly treated, but Devin Werkheiser, nobody knows that. You know, it's not like he was in a bunch of tabloids for being arrested. You know, completely flew under the radar. And I don't know. I mean, you know, here's what I do know is, like, when I look at here's what I've always thought about Dustin Diamond. This is just me just now, you know, going into that territory that we're not even sure we want to or not. But here we go. With Dustin Diamond, right, I've always thought, you know, as I, 10 years ago read those weird stories about, like, you know, how he was getting into porn and then later was like, no, I'm not getting into porn. And then I think at one point he, like, was holding fundraisers to pay his own rent and stuff like that. And he was always seemed like a fairly angry guy about being Screech and, you know, trying to get out from under that shadow a little bit. And what I always saw was I always saw a guy who got labeled as a nerd playing a nerd named Screech, who was like the brunt of the joke, you know, on a TV show, and then grew up to be a person and hated that. That was how he was labeled. And here's the thing. From my own experience, I've had that. From my own experience where, like, there was points in my life where I was like, I don't like being this nerdy guy that everybody keeps telling me sometimes that I am. Even to this day. Like, even to this day, I'll get a thing and they're like, all right, Chris, you're a tech guy. You're smart and you killed your girlfriend. And I'm like,
but how glad would you be to take that tech guy role on the next CSI?
Yeah, exactly.
Nebraska or CSI Fargo, Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so, and when I look at that situation with Dustin Diamond, I see a guy that was a very well-known actor, but that show did not live long enough or pay enough to cover his bills for the rest of his life, like certain jobs can, and was not getting hired as an actor to do roles after that, so wasn't paying the bills. And whatever aspect of the ego that exists that prevents you from going and entering the regular workforce and doing something else and just feeling absolutely stuck. Like, there was the story about the actor from The Cosby Show, I think it was, right? That was of somebody took a photo of him at a – I think he was working a checker or something at Trader Joe's. Yeah. And
shamed them because they're assholes.
Yeah, and then shamed them because they're assholes. But there's that thing that exists for especially former child actors that experience a certain level of notoriety, needing to go out into the regular world. But it's like, well, the acting industry, it's not like there's a pension or something for you. I mean, maybe there is at 60 something.
Like, oh, you've been doing this 10 years. Cool. We got a job for you. Like, there's no – yeah, exactly.
There's no loyalty.
And, yeah, I mean, the most famous story is Gary Coleman working as a security guard, right? Like, that is the – you know, that is the – like, that is the punchline to, like, the late 90s, early 2000s every joke on every late night show, you know?
Yeah, and so I just saw a person that found something that they really enjoyed, received a certain level of notoriety as a result of it, wanted to continue to be a part of that world or that club. And the club said, nope, you're out. See you later. And they're like, well, come on. And it was actually sad. And I don't know anything about him as a person. I'm thinking about the story more. More generally, because it's that story that I'm telling right now is very common and happens all the time. And that's what people are constantly wanting to go back for. And you can get caught in that place where you experience that notoriety. It's having experienced a certain level of fame that then prevents you from going out and doing a regular thing unless you can get over your ego and do it.
Well, yeah. And we've talked about that a lot, how tricky that is, but you're right. And we've talked about how even a lot of actors face that, like the actor that was working in Trader Joe's and got, like, shamed for it. Who, thank God, by the way, immediately a bunch of awesome people in the entertainment industry reached out and, like, gave him a bunch of jobs, which I know there's a bunch of actors then. They're like, someone shame me, please. I bet there's a lot of people thinking that. But anyway, you know, that'll happen to actors, but it's particularly kind of abusive when it's a former kid actor because, they're a kid. It's just that black and white. And I imagine for the actor like Dustin Diamond, it feels like that too, you know? And, you know, also, God rest his soul. It's really, he did pass this year. So, you know, I always feel a little trite saying things like that.
Well, yeah. And so this is why I take issue with this subject, is because I think it's fair to bring up a specific individual so that we can talk about a topic generally, because
we don't know Dustin. Like, there's nothing, we can't say anything about his life one way or the other.
But also, we're a podcast about this subject matter, you know? And that's it. And like, that's our, this is our argument, folks. This is, we're going to start arguing now, which is, that's the argument. Is I'm like,
well, maybe we can.
I know we are beholden to the subject matter too. And when it, and when that subject matter exists in national news headlines in regards to former kid actors, you know, I mean, look, that's the thing. Like, he died, and that's immediately, you know, as tragic as that is, you know, and also fuck cancer, but like, as tragic that is, that's, it's tied to him. Like, immediately, it's like the only reason anyone's clicking on it even makes news because he's screeched the former kid actor from Saved by the Bell, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, that is a, even bringing that up, the fact that like, you know, you're a former kid actor. If you see a good amount of success, it's going to stick with you the rest of your life. And how that affects your life is varies widely. And we're exploring that, you know. But, you know, for you and I just feel like we're going to have to start opening that stuff up. Because also, well, too, like, you know, as we've seen,
So with that last statement you just made, I would actually, if anybody would like to reach out to us and give us their opinion, if they would like to hear us cover these types of topics.
No, because then we're going to get.
No,
guys, skip that part. Because well, you and I like that we're opening up the discussion then, but I have no way. There's no way somebody on Instagram is going to be like, discuss this. And we're like, okay, there's no way. There's absolutely no way.
Well, it's not taking specific directions. I'm talking about something very specific.
Well, there's only so many things. There's only so many things, which is every former kid actor that's in the news. You know, it's like they get to the news, good or bad. You know, Ryan Gosling, former kid actor. Jeanette McCurdy came out recently and was like, I hated being a kid actor and I hate acting. I'm done. You know, it's like, and that made national headlines. Like, there's just stuff that happens. Obviously, like Shia LaBeouf.
We should have a news roll that just goes through like, okay, this week in child actor news, Ryan Gosling is now going to be starring in such and such movie. Yeah, so and so just welcomed a baby. So and so's
No. Obviously, as when it's not just sort of something normal.
We got to do the good out, and the bad news. Otherwise, we're just like the clickbait.
Otherwise, all we know is just clickbait, just doing the bad news and reporting on stuff. We'll figure this out, guys. We are a work in progress, and we are learning as we're going along. AJ, let's. There's a couple little things real fast before we get to some of the questions people threw out there for us, which, by the way, thank you guys. Awesome questions. Here's the two things. You were talking to me at one point just a couple weeks ago, and you were like, somehow, I don't know who you were talking with, but you remembered a job that you did that you completely forgot about. What is this? Remind me.
I was doing an episode of Christy Carlson Romano's new YouTube show, which is Snack and React. That's what it's called. And so she was showing me clips of shows and I was supposed to react to them. And I couldn't remember what the shows were for the life of me.
Shows like you're on, you mean?
Yeah, shows that I was on. It was, yeah. I had to watch things that I was in and react to them. And one of them was a clip from a show I did called The Nightmare Room. I know it's on my resume. I can't remember a single day on set. I don't know what happened. I couldn't even remember who was in it. It was with me and Brenda Song. I had no idea that Brenda was there. I thought the only thing we'd ever worked on together was a Coca-Cola commercial. We're in a scene. Acting. I had a limp. I was like on crutches. I don't remember any of it.
You were Tiny Tim and you don't remember a single thing about
none of it. Yeah.
That is so funny.
I must have just blacked out. I don't recall.
No, that's it. I do wonder because we haven't asked that to guests, but I wanted to because it's a hard question. You're not going to be able to – no one's going to answer. You're not going to say like, hey, what do you not remember? They're going to be like, what? But that's what it happens to every former kid actor. There are these jobs that someone will remind you of at some point. It's a parent or somebody else and you'll go, oh my God. Yes, I definitely know I was in that, but have no actual recollection of it. There's no.
Yeah, you never see it. It's like because it premiered on some strange channel at some strange time and you had too much going on. I've literally never seen that. And there were a few things that she showed me that I'd never seen before, but it was fun to have that.
To remember it. I know. I'm wondering as this goes on, if the more jobs we will remember us having.
That question. I'd love to ask you, what jobs do you not remember doing?
But as soon as something comes up, I was thinking actually recently, and I don't know that, you know that song Black Velvet? Black Velvet in that little boy's smile.
No.
Black Velvet? Anyway, I'll send you the link. Everybody else listening, you'll look it up, you'll know it.
Velvet and that little boy's smile?
Yeah, the Black Velvet. It's this very famous song. If you YouTube it, it's literally been watched like 200 million times. And I only know this because recently I tried to go on YouTube because I heard it and I thought, I think I'm in that music video. I was like, I'm pretty sure. And then I watched, I was like, no, I'm not in that one, but I think I'm in, I might've been actually in a, I don't know. There's a song I got to go ask my parents because it's that. I was like,
it sounds
there's some
like
weird
you got
old
those
famous
lyrics.
Song.
Those lyrics can't be right.
Yes, they are, dude. Don't worry about it. Don't make fun of my song lyrics. This is a, no, no. It, the lyrics are right. Black Velvet and That Little Boy's Smile. She's making a song about Elvis. And anyway, I did a music video when I was really young. I'm going to ask my parents what it is, but that's what triggered it. I was like, oh, right. There was some old famous song that I did this video for. I don't even know. And I have no recollection of it at all, except my parents always mentioned it. And that's the thing I remember. But here's the things that have come to my mind that I totally forgot about, which I mentioned to you, is no one ever knows this, but so really young actors, especially before the age of 12, you know, kids, they lose their teeth all the time, right? So a lot of former kid actors have, I don't know what they do these days, but back in my day, they had these things called flippers, and they were like retainers with fake teeth on them. And I had maybe 50 flippers. I was like, I looked like a serial killer. Like I had a collection of weird teeth inside our home because I had lost so many teeth and was working. And the thing is if you're filming
something.
Were they
sometimes
you lose,
too big? Like you're.
Yes, dude. You have no idea. Some were weird. Some were a little discolored. Like it was not always great. It really
and
wasn't.
And are these real teeth that are going to somebody else's real tooth?
No. This is like some teeth. Weird plastic mold. There's some weird. Honestly, I really want to figure out who the dentist is. That's like, I'm the child actor fake tooth doctor like because that's what it was like some agent was like, you got to go to Dr. So-and-so, and you show up and the guy's like, okay, how many teeth are we missing, what side, okay, perfect, we're gonna do this. And then it's like it was a business where he was making flippers for little kid actors, and you use these little fake teeth and you put them in because if you're filming 1 week and you lose a tooth in the interim, you got to film the next week. There's no continuity. They need you to have the same teeth you had last time. And so
you gotta get those flippers.
I know. And I forgot about that. I was like, oh, I forgot this life where like in my pocket, I always had a flipper. And before I started the audition, I had to do it.
You would be the weirdest person in the world if you still had all your flippers.
If I still like, here's my trophy case full of flippers. This is the one I wore when I booked, when I was in this movie. This is the flipper I used here. It would be like a Planet Hollywood. Like here's the flipper DiCaprio had in What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
That would be a great thing for Planet Hollywood.
It would be a great thing. I bet that sells for
$200. What if there's a Planet Hollywood child actor edition that we open up?
Yeah, we open up where it's just a whole bunch of flick. Guess this mouth. That is Jodie Foster, Taxi Driver. That's who that is. So it's been interesting to learn stuff. I also remember this other story, which I'll go into depth with at another point. But I remember this horrible story where I had gone to L.A. from Jersey for a big callback for something. And I went with my manager at the time, who, and all I remember of this guy's his name was Ken. Nice guy. God forbid, I hope he's not listening to this somehow and then hears this story and what I'm about to say. But Ken took me to LA, and we got to LA to do this big audition. I don't know if they flew me out. I don't know what the deal was. All I know is my parents couldn't go. I have no idea why. Either my mom was on drugs or she was just taking care of my other brothers. I don't know what the reason was. But one of those two, him and I went out. We stayed in LA and we got there. And I remember thinking on the plane flight, one, I'd never been on a plane with a stranger before. I didn't know Ken very well. That's the disclaimer to all this. Ken and I were not close. I didn't know him from a hole in the wall. There was like 50 agents I had at the time from all different kinds of companies. That's the way you can do it in New York. And so I had all these agents, all these managers. I didn't know anybody. Ken, suddenly I'm on the plane with Ken. And we get to the hotel. And I remember thinking the whole time, I'm under the impression that Ken and I obviously will not be sharing a hotel room. I will have my own hotel room. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be like
I'm
Home Alone.
I'm under the impression that
New York.
Ken and
yes.
I will not be sharing a hotel.
Yes, we will not. This is not, you know, that's what's going to happen. And we get there and we only have one room. And I remember Ken, probably to his credit, Ken probably made some phone calls and Ken probably called my mom and something happened, right? Because
I can't get into the kid brain. Kid brain
can't get into
think
the kid
like
brain.
That.
No, this my kid brain was, I guess I'm sleeping next to Ken tonight and that doesn't feel good. And so I stayed, I'll never forget, I was so tense. I stayed on, you know, my side of the room. He was like, you want to watch something? I was like, nope, got homework. And it's like, I was like, don't look at me, Ken. Don't even, nope, Ken. Don't breathe, you know, just like I was like so on guard and you know, and that's it. And there's so much to say about this. It all I remember is this is the only other memory I have is that we're leaving. We only stayed like a night or two. It's very quick. We're leaving 2 days later. And I remember Ken was like, hey, did you feel how nice these robes are? And I just remember my brain was like, don't talk about robes, Ken. You're in a room with a child, Ken. Do not do this. We're not talking about the robes. And Ken then took his robe, shoved it in his bag, and then was trying to get me to shove my robe in my bag. And I was like, why are we going to shove the robes in the bag? He's like, you can take these. They say they're complimentary robes. Trust me. And if it gets billed, it gets billed to whoever. Don't worry about it. And I remember being like, I'm not stealing a robe with you, you weird fucking weirdo. What are you doing making a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old trying to steal a robe? Anyway, we did. We stole some robes, and I came back with this weird robe that I then promptly threw in the trash. And here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering a ton about this as an adult. How did my parents let me do this? Like, this is how it happens. This is, you go to that hotel room, Ken molests you. Like, this is how that happens. There is not a better time and place for that to take place. Which is horrible, maybe right now to joke about and end the story on. And then, that's what came to me. I was like, oh, right. Like, I didn't even remember that until we were having these conversations with people. And somehow that somebody mentioned a manager and that popped in my head. And I was like, shit. Also, I'm very glad I didn't get molested. But two, you know, that is a crazy part of this conversation that we have yet to touch on. That, like, mm-hmm. I've realized too, that like is going to have to come up at some point for sure. I think it's worth mentioning. I try to mention it funny, but also we just wanted to bring it into this because that is a part of it. It's a, and it's really awkward. It's hard to start bringing up and talking to, but we're making space for that possibility. We've been conscious of it and understand that. That's
it. Yeah. I feel like it's, I mean, it's such a heavy subject. The fact that we got through the first season without tackling that, we're able to learn more about this whole process and all of that in a way that's, I'm glad we didn't. It's like first episode out of the game. Here you go, everybody.
Let's talk about it. I know exactly. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Thank God we're getting better at interviewing people and bantering over a microphone before we touch on that. But it's worth it, man, because it's hand in hand. And, you know, everybody's heard those stories. And, you know, and it is a part of this conversation overall that I'm sure at some point we will cross a bridge into. But on that, really horrible dark note, guys, we're going to try to move to our last little part here, which is these amazing questions. Everybody sent in a whole bunch of you sent in to us. And AJ is going to start us off. We're going to rattle these off real fast.
Yeah. So I'll just start with saying it's awesome that people are listening to the show, enjoying the show.
Yeah, it's so dope, guys.
Keep doing it, sending in questions. You and I came up with this idea on a train from Rome to Florence, and here we are, however many months later, still doing it. Yeah.
With hundreds of people talking to everybody. It's awesome. We appreciate you guys.
Okay, so we're just going to burn through some of these things. Some of these are really simple. Will there be more Disney and Nickelodeon guests on our show from the early aughts? Or any time.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, there will be. Yep. We're getting all the Nick kids, all the Disney kids at some point.
And with that, I would say I would love to interview some of the people that were from the generation that I grew up watching just to know what is life like 10 years in the future from people that are older than us.
What's going to happen to us at 50?
Yeah, because everyone's been around for many of our guests have been around our age. And it would be great to get people on either end.
Well, we reached out to a lot of
us.
The people. We reached out to, you know, we picked our guests because it was just some close friends, people we knew had interesting stories and stuff. And also people who reached out to us, you know, people that kind of saw what we were doing immediately and said, hey, you know, I'd love to be a part of it. But we will be branching out with our future guests for sure in all kinds of directions. We're also going to interview like some agents and managers, and maybe AJ finally gets his wish and we'll interview somebody from SAG.
Please, God. Okay. Here you go. Here's your next question. What did a typical day look like for you guys when AJ did Even Stevens and Chris did a movie? I love that I have one job specifically and Chris like, and then Chris like on his
What was a typical day like for you?
I mean, I can remember because it was so specific on that job. Guys, I did more than one job, but anyway.
More than Even Stevens.
But it was always waking up at like 5:30 or 6, getting in the car with but I always had to shower because if my hair was dry and they tried to do it on set, it would just be the craziest mess you could ever imagine. So I would have to go to set with wet hair. That was like a thing that had to happen. Weird. So I would drive with my mom from Toluca Lake, which is Burbank essentially, to Marina Del Rey, which is insane to do every day in traffic. But it would be me in the passenger seat with the Thomas guide,
which is a thing before there was GPS and everyone had maps on their phone, trying to navigate my mom. Okay, you got to get off the 405. Okay, we're going to take Sepulveda.
Get off the 210. This is the exit.
Yeah. You got to get on Sepulveda. Okay, these are the back roads. And we're taking back roads.
So it's not traffic. A leisurely drive is what you're saying. It's a nightmare.
No, it was a very stressful drive. But I was an excellent mapsman, if that's a thing. I could navigate. Were. Oh, it was very
you
impressive.
You love directing traffic. Yeah.
And my mom was a great driver in LA. She was not timid. She would, you know, get right in there. So that was what that was all about. And then you get to set. There's the food truck out there. You eat your breakfast burrito. Sometimes your teacher orders two or three breakfast burritos because they want to have one for later. And then you're just hanging out with your friends, doing school on set, playing music in the green room when they would audition pretty girls for different roles, and then making comedy on set. Yeah, it was great. I had a lot of fun.
What do you mean? What happened when they were auditioning Pretty Girls on set? You're like, need a reader?
Yeah. Every guy on set would find any excuse to walk through the lobby, but then Shia and I would just sit in the lobby and play guitar and just screw around.
Hey, ladies, who are you auditioning for? All right, I like that role. I like that role. I'll put in a good word for you. Yeah, that's what I'll do. Is that what you guys were doing?
Yeah. And also, as a kid, you can only work 9.5 hours a day, so you get to clock, you know, because set days are long, 14, 16-hour days. Days are not uncommon at all, but when you're a kid, it's 9.5 hours. It's like, okay, gotta clock out. See you guys later.
And you did your school, so well done. Yeah, mine was different. Mine was like unpredictable and scattered and all over the places you can get, because I was like, I never had that consistent on a TV show for years job. So I was like, my life was like on a Tuesday, I was like eating 4 boxes of Chips Ahoy cookies and throwing up in my trailer profusely. And then the next
day. Because you were doing a commercial.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So I'd be filming a commercial, eating 4 boxes of Chips Ahoy cookies, throwing up all over myself and telling people, they're like, you okay? And I'm like, totally fine. And then the following day, I would be like I remember, like, you know, like the following day I there was this movie called, I think it's called Frailty or something, but I was up for it, and I had a long string of auditions with Vince Vaughn, where I would go into this audition room and Vince Vaughn would like push me up against a wall abusively. It's like this abusive father, and I would just be like crying for 2.5 hours, just like, no, please, you know. And then like the next day I'd be at school, you know, back at school, and they're like, hey, you were out of school yesterday. What were you doing? I was like, just an audition. Like, was beating me, and I was crying all day. And then the following day after that, I would be on
Touched by an Angel.
Like,
every third day, you were always on Touched by an Angel.
Yeah, I was always on Touched by an Angel.
Where's Chris? I don't know. What day is it? Yeah, Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel. That's what he's on. No, then I'd be like at like Dodger Stadium with Billy Crystal filming a scene for a baseball movie that he's directing with – you know, with like, that's like takes like story about Mickey Mantle. So it's like a period piece. And, you know, and suddenly I'm in like this whole outfit. Yeah, it's cool. But that's how it was. It literally was like, I never have a guide in my mind as to like the order of these things. It just felt like one big mishmash of like unpredictable showbiz insanity, you know, just auditions and work and all kinds of weird stuff and all kinds of weird experiences. What else, Eric? AJ?
Next question. Tell us about other things going on right now in your lives. I guess what they mean is, what else do we do behind
this podcast? We just like to record. We just hang out and then record stuff. And then we eat some fried chicken sandwiches. We go around LA eating fried chicken sandwiches. What are you doing, AJ? AJ started surfing a ton.
That's just like a pandemic thing. I surfed all the time as a kid and then stopped for 10 years. And now I surf all the time again. But my life, so I stopped being an actor. Gosh, what has it been now, Chris? Like 10 years, 8 years now. And got behind the camera.
You still dabbled.
Yeah. But right. I didn't officially hang it up at that point, but really started to make the transition to go behind the camera. And the first to become a producer or become a development executive. And the first company I worked for was one of the companies that produced Even Stevens, and just continue to work my way up from there. So I spend now every day as a development executive developing kids shows. Guys,
kids shows.
I develop kids shows. That's what I do.
That's what
I've been
does.
In kids entertainment. Anybody? For 22 years.
Exactly. He's never stopped and he never will.
But I also love it. It's freaking awesome. It's a total
and you're
dream
on that
come
side.
True. Yeah.
And you're great at it. I will say, as your friend, you're wonderful at it. You got a brain for it. It's perfect. It's like a perfect job for you.
Thanks, Chris. What about you?
For me, I got the life of an actor. So it's a majority of my life is unemployment and auditioning. But I think in the last year, I mean, I became a father, and which is, it's been nice with the world, you know, everybody being inside it, it meant 100% focus on a baby, which has been so beautiful and such a nice blessing. And then it's also been nice. I've been able to write a ton, with there being very sparse work for actors. So I've been gearing up to make my own first feature film, which I've been now been working on writing. And I fully committed to, like, once the pandemic's over and the world's safe, God willing, then I can go fully jump into being a stand-up comedian, which is nice. So I've been writing all of my comedy, because I've dabbled and I've done it, but I've always had, this is another thing about maybe actors in general, but definitely former kid actors, like, I've been lucky enough to consistently work. And what that always has done is meant that, like, I don't ever actually have to pursue things fully, you know, anything else fully.
I'm going to take a photography class at college, but I can only go to 4 weeks really because I'm going to book a job and then I got to go.
Exactly. And so it's been nice. It's really nice to, like, go full on with some other creative endeavors and do that. So writing tons, being a dad, a husband, and AJ and I are making this thing and eating lots of fried chicken sandwiches all over Los Angeles.
God, I love those fried chicken sandwiches.
So good, aren't they?
We keep you guys up to date. Yeah. I'm curious to hear our different answers on this, which is, how did we become friends? But it's a little bit more specific. It's not just how did we meet, but, like, how did we actually become, you know, real friends?
This is good. This is like a question like you ask a couple at a wedding. You see, like, how varied the answers are, you know?
Yeah.
When did you know
what my answer is? I honestly don't know. Answer? You have to go. Maybe I should. No, you go first because I don't know.
This was when I felt like I was like, you're my buddy. That's it. You're my buddy, whether you like it or not. And I'll tell you, actually, we met, and then I'll tell you where you weren't my buddy. And I was like, no, not friends with that guy. And then I'll tell you how that changed, which is we were at Oakwood Apartments. All the kids are there. Some former kid actor's birthday. And you rolled up on your skateboard. You had no shirt on because you had been swimming or something that day. Gosh. You had a backpack on.
What a jerk.
No shirt. I know. And you were like the first kid I ever met around our age that had chest hair. I was like, holy shit. That's what happens. Well, and you had some chest hair. And all the girls were like, it was like a magnet. They were like, chest hair. And
I did. I wish I would have realized that at the hair. Time. I had no idea.
You had no idea. And that's maybe what was so revolting and disgusting about you. But all the girls flocked. And I just remember you had your backpack on. You said something. You had like your skateboard. You're skating around, being like goofy. And you like, and then some girl that I, all night long, I was like, oh, for the love of God, if you could just look at me for 2 seconds, like, my whole life would be complete. And like, and had not even breathed my way, was flocking to you. And she walked up to you, she said something, all I heard you say is, you're like, I have a backpack. And
then you God.
And I remember thinking,
that's,
I was
the,
like,
most,
and this
embarrassing
girl,
thing you've said on this show, I think.
I hope it is, because it should be embarrassing. It was horrific. And I remember thinking, like, I'm not friends with that guy. It was like, whoever that guy, and I
don't even remember
no
that
way.
Guy.
Well, I remember that's him very great. Well, because I remember, because then, you know, I don't know, 6 months later, we're hanging out with, we met through Andrew. But how we were really friends is actually, I feel like years went by, you know, despite the fact, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. We all kinds of wonderful experiences we had, in getting close, but you came to a birthday. I hadn't seen you in like a year or two, and you showed up to a birthday party of mine at an apartment. I was having a huge birthday. It was like 50 people. So we're like in this, squished into this one bedroom apartment of mine. And you showed up with this awesome picture you took of Bob's Big Boy out in Toluca Lake, which was the diner. I'm sure if you're anybody from LA would probably know, but if you're not, it's just a big diner, an old classic diner from LA, but it's where me and AJ and all of our little kid actor group, we all hung out at for years. And that was like we were tethered to that. And that's where we ate food. It's where we hung out in that parking lot until 2 o'clock in the morning if we wanted to. And Bob's, and you gave me this nice black and white photo. And it was so nice. Nobody ever given me a present like that. And I was like, man, that touched me. That hit me right here, you know? So,
wow, nice.
And I still have it. Still have it. Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. I'll always have it.
I guess for me, I mean, I remember meeting at the pool,
cool, dude,
and all of that stuff.
But cool, pressure's on, dude.
I understand that.
There's
so
heartwarming,
so,
and cool and really charming about
it.
So me.
We were always friends. We were always friends. But there was a period when I was ready to move out because I lived with my mom forever, as many of you guys know on this show. I was ready to move out. And I think you were ready to move out too. And I was like, Chris, we should move out together.
Out.
But no, but you were living with your dad at the time.
Oh, yeah. But then I went back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I was like, Chris, we should move out together.
And moved in with my dad for 6 months. And AJ was like, I need to leave my mom's house. And I was like, I need to leave my dad's.
Said, Chris, we should move in together. And you're like, basically, you said, over my cold dead body. Will we ever move in together? I was so offended. I was like, what? Why not? Can we not move in together? What's the big deal? But we were still friends. We were hanging out. And then one day you said, okay, AJ, I think I'm ready to move in with you. And I was like, I felt so gifted. I felt, this is incredible. What a gift you're giving me, Chris. We get to move. You'll agree to move in together with me. I'm pretty easy, but
you're still welcome. You're still so welcome.
That definitely changed our relationship. Moving, living together definitely changed.
For sure.
Our
we became like a married couple. Yeah. Within 2 easy months, we were throwing glass bottles across the living room at each other. And then later on be like, hey, you want a foot rub? Yeah, we'll take a foot rub. It was like a 7 year old. Yeah. 7 year old married couple.
It was great until you would play Call of Duty on like the highest volume possible till fucking like midnight. I remember getting you headphones for a birthday gift. You refused to wear them, which I still don't understand.
I know, and I'd be like, hey man, you want to watch Shutter Island? I heard it's dope. And you're like, no man, I want to watch this wolf documentary I've seen every weekend for the last 6 years. I love wolves.
All right, hold on.
Let's not go. Yeah, wait, we're getting too revealing here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do one last question. Okay. Okay.
Here. Somebody asked if we'd be on Cameo or do some merch. I don't know. We're not getting on Cameo. If you want any merch, AJ will send you his used underwear if you really want to pay for it.
That's so gross.
otherwise, we don't got any plans for merch right now. I think podcasts do that when they get really, really popular. At some point.
I think this is a good question leading into the next season, which is there a dream child actor you guys would love to interview in the future?
Yeah. What would yours be? Who do you think? DiCaprio.
I would love to. Yeah. So I'd love to interview somebody that's a bit older to get that longer experience. I think Christian Bale comes to mind for me more so than DiCaprio because it's easier to associate DiCaprio in a way with his career as a former child actor because we all watched the sitcom that he was on and What's Eating Gilbert Grape and that stuff. But
yeah.
I don't think many people connect Christian Bale to his
Empire
work.
The Sun and being an actor and the news. And
he was incredible.
Yeah, he's incredible. I know. He was basically the same. Yeah.
Also, Val Kilmer would be super cool because that's the other side of it, which is nobody knows any of the work that he did as a child actor. Maybe he never worked in one, but then became a super famous adult actor.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I'd love to. Yeah, if we could interview DiCaprio at some point. Honestly, we got to get the prize jewel. The prize jewel is what we're shooting for. Macaulay Culkin, guys. Like, we got to get Culkin on here at some point. That's really like, if there is any more famous of a kid actor, I don't know who that is, quite honestly.
Yeah.
There's a few other ones I have that I'll refrain from only because we're going to start giving these dope quotes. We're going to try to do some quotes before each intro so I stop screaming that one word that I will no longer say ever again on this thing. And I don't want to give them away by listing off a few very obscure, slightly obscure former kid actors in some cool roles. But here's what we'll say. We're really excited to bring some amazing interviews to you guys. We won't name the people just yet because we haven't recorded with them yet. But we've reached out and there's some really, I think, some really fun, wonderful people that you guys get to hear from. So we're really excited to share that with you. And again, we're so appreciative that you guys have all come on this journey with us and it's made everything so worthwhile for us. And it's really, it's given us a lot of life and juice and we're so excited. And so we won't let the break be too long, but AJ, what else you got?
I guess that's all we got. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun doing this with you and that's the main thing is it's been fun doing this with you and the fact that people are listening to it is just like on top of it all, but it's been,
that's the heartwarming thing I wanted to hear. AJ, okay. AJ, I love you, man.
All right. Let's just leave this.
Yeah. Got him, guys. Okay. Without further ado, season 1 is done.
It's coming to a close. That's it.
Coming to a close.
That's a wrap.
Thanks so much, guys. That's a wrap.